And we'll start off with the antitrust policy notice and the code of conduct. So if you guys, I think most of you guys have gotten a chance to read this. It's available right off of our social impact page, but please take a quick look and then we can move forward in a little bit. All right. So just to quickly, you know, start the meeting, and we have some few, you know, a couple of new people, as well as Karen joining us after a little hiatus from our group. Why don't we go through a quick round of introductions just so everyone can kind of get to know each other a little bit. So just for everyone, I can kick that off. My name is Nancy Mann. I'm the chair of the Social Impact Special Interest Group. You know, my interests are primarily in the climate and environmental space, but definitely really, really interested in the social impact and really interested in helping out any of the new folks or, you know, people currently in the community in any way possible. So just feel free to reach out to me. Karen, do you mind going?
Sure. So I'm Karen Ottoni, based in New York, if you didn't already hear. I'm on the Hyperledger staff. So we have a team at Hyperledger called the Ecosystem Team. It's led by Daniela Barbosa. My other colleagues are Marta Pikarska, who's in Cambridge, and David Boswell, who is in San Francisco. And also there's an Ecosystem Team for Asia, led by Julian. And what we do is we are the point of contact for the special interest groups. So each one of us is assigned different groups. That does not mean anything related to leading the group, directing the group at all. The community always directs everything at Hyperledger. It just means that, you know, if I help the group, I help move barriers out of the way, so the group can do things it wants to do. Right. So if, you know, the SIG has a topic, let's say, you know, COVID and like social impact activities using Hyperledger technologies, COVID-19, let's say, if that's happening, I don't know. And you want to do a blog about it, then I would help get that done on our website, get that posted and promoted. We also have opportunities for, you know, usually it's the chairs, but anyone who's very heavily involved with, you know, significant knowledge or expertise, we will invite them to speak at different events that Hyperledger holds in different parts of the world. For example, you know, Nancy, she actually was just with us in Phoenix at our Hyperledger Global Forum, which is an annual event that we put on. And she went there and was presenting and talking about the SIG there and what you guys do. And I imagine you talked about that after, sometime in March after the event. So anyways, just to give you an idea of, you know, sort of why I'm here. I'm not like here to, you know, check on what's being done or in any sort of like oversight way. It's more here to help, here to promote, here to make sure we have like a healthy, active community.
Thanks, Karen. And just to add to that, you know, if there are community members that have any kind of you know, thoughts or kind of comments and stuff like that, you know, having Karen on the call is just great to be able to facilitate that conversation better. Alicia?
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Alicia Noel, and I do research and consulting related to how blockchain is being used in agriculture and food supply chains. This really came out of my having lived in China for a long time, where there's a lot of food safety concerns due to food fraud. Right now, I'm also co-editor of a collection for the research journal Frontiers in Blockchain. The collection is on blockchain uses for social and economic equity in food and agricultural supply chains. So if anyone is doing research around that and would be interested in sharing some of their research, please let me know. Frontiers is an open access journal. It's an open source journal. So in order to fund that, there are fees involved for people who publish, but Frontiers has a lot of bursaries available, scholarships available to fund that for people or organizations that don't have the funds to pay it.
That's awesome, Alicia. And one thing that I'm going to be bringing up in a little bit is we're probably going to do an effort to write a social impact, social interest group, kind of Frontiers and, you know, how we're applying blockchain to the space, but writing a blog post for Hyperledger. And I would love to kind of get your input on that.
Oh, definitely. I'd love to speak with you about that. There's a lot of different ways it's being used in food and ag, far beyond just traceability. Most people know about the track and trace uses of blockchain in ag and food supply chains, but there's a lot more to that. A lot more.
Awesome. Okay. Sounds great. Hey, Miriam.
So Merim Mehri, I'm based in Dubai, and I head the Center for the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is the UAE affiliate of the one in San Francisco hosted by the World Economic Forum. And the center is a collaboration between the Dubai Future Foundation, which is Dubai government entity. Okay, I don't think he's speaking to me. Between the Dubai Future Foundation and the World Economic Forum, and we are basically a research center that develop governance frameworks and policy for emerging technology. And blockchain is one of our portfolios. The other two are AI and precision medicine, which is a bit slightly different to AI and blockchain, I would say. I'll be presenting something later. And again, I thank Nancy for the opportunity and looking forward to discussing.
Thank you, Miriam. And, you know, if folks on the call haven't been to the Dubai area, I was fortunate enough to go on a trip last September where I met, Miriam's team, and they have some of the coolest facilities and most cutting edge technologies there. So, you know, I'd love to have her speak a little bit about the stuff that they have over there and just kind of give us some more broader perspective. Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
Hi, Mark Liberati. I am in Bonn, Germany, currently serving as a policy head for the United Nations Volunteer Program. I was a volunteer myself and was in different forums on blockchain in the UN system, most recently the working group on AI, blockchain, and big data for our digital transformation project that's undergoing in my organization. So I've been a member for this group and others, similar ones, for about a year now, and really enjoy it. So I hope I participate meaningfully. And wish all is well in this very turbulent time to all. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, everyone. I'm Bobby Mascara. I am from New Jersey. I've been a member of this group for a while, which gave me the opportunity to spearhead a social impact project called The Giving Chain, where we try to match donors to recipients through a interface on Sawtooth. We made a proof of concept, and I'm hoping that could get a little bit farther. So that's my interest in the social impact group. And I also am the chair of the Learning Materials Working Group. So I collect all information I hear and I put it up on the library for the community.
Thanks, Bobby. Hey, Jim.
Hi, good morning. How are y'all doing? My name is Jim Couples. I'm located out here in Oregon, And I've been working on blockchain applications that mostly deal with agriculture. So there's a few products that I've used Hyperledger for, mostly in supply chain for agriculture, as well as another application that is taking drone images, making them a hash, and then storing them. And I'm mostly using Sawtooth.
So is there anyone else? Thanks, Jim. Is there anyone else on the call that I missed? I don't think so. Awesome. So thank you guys all for joining the call today. I know everyone's greatly impacted by the virus and the current situation that we're dealing with. One of the things that Karen had surfaced in the emails, if you guys saw on the community list, was we could talk about a little bit, you know, ways in which kind of blockchain technologies may be used to combat COVID-19. One of the things to note is that the healthcare SIG actually had a special topic discussion for their last meeting, but they also have one on April 3rd. They're having another one about conquering COVID-19 using blockchain technologies, and they have a couple speakers. But, you know, I did want to open the floor if there was any interest in probably preparing a discussion point for maybe our next meeting about this from the group. I know for Alicia and Jim, there's a lot of discussions on how agriculture and supply chain traceability may be impacted by this. So I don't know if you guys have heard anything or if that's an interest on your end, as well as for the various other endeavors as well.
Yeah, that is interesting. I missed. I saw that there was a meeting with the supply chain folks. I just didn't get a chance to make it.
There should be recording available on their wiki page, so you can catch it there and maybe catch the next call. Hopefully, I wanted to let you know that we are. Because there's so many different, this topic touches on so many different groups and parts of the Hyperledger community. And people also want to know and are looking for who is using Hyperledger technology for this. You know, are there ideas out there? We are looking to create somewhere on the wiki where all this information will come together. So keep an eye out for that. I'll send it out to the group once it's ready.
Awesome, thanks, Karen.
Yeah, I had missed that presentation as well, so it's good to know it's online. Thank you, Karen.
I'll try and find the link now so you guys can get to it.
Awesome. So a couple other administrative things. One of the things was the new member center that we just developed. So I'm still waiting for any feedback that you guys may have on that. That way we can improve it in different ways. I know one of them, Ravathi had said, was to kind of incorporate some of the other pages that we're creating as part of the center page so that everyone can kind of get that information over. So I'm not going to go into it quickly, I'm just going to gloss over this, but a couple other things were the connecting with the community presenters, as well as the creating a social impact special interest group page to consolidate the social impact resources. Jim, I know you're leading those, and I know you've been a little bit busy. Do you think we could have something to discuss next time?
Yeah, and if there's anyone that's added one of the areas and Atlassian, which of course our wiki is on, and they can help me out with that, I'd appreciate that. That's just the actual adding for that section on the social impact resources. As far as the contacting community presenters, I've been doing that, although the past, probably since before the March big conference, I haven't touched base with anyone. And I've been mostly just taking them through the through our meeting notes and looking at who is the presenter. And then often I can't find an email in our wiki. So I'll be going on to LinkedIn, but But if there's a different solution for that, please let me know.
Jim, if you want to let me, maybe we can review at some point, but like who you've reached out to, maybe I can find some emails. I know some of them I have, and then some of them I think Karen might have if we can't find it anywhere else.
Oh, that sounds good. I mean, I guess we'll get a chance to catch up later this week, so we can just cover it then.
That's good. And just quickly, just a shout out to the community. Is there anything that you guys would like to kind of bring up or share or discuss about before we move into you know, the community updates and the community presentation? All right. One other thing to quickly bring up is the Hyperledger Mentorship Program. So they're currently accepting applications for students. So, if, you know, I know most of you, a lot of you guys have collaborations with the, you know, different schools or universities. You know, feel free to please, you know, bring up that we have summer mentorship programs, and there are 18 projects that are available for interns that are interested. So, if there are any students that are interested in blockchain technologies, we can recruit them our way.
A quick question on that. Is there a web page or something with more info on that?
This link right here.
Perfect. Great. Thank you. Yeah, over at Rutgers, there's a group of students that have created a Rutgers Blockchain Center, and I've been speaking with them since we met last year, so I'll share that with them.
Sounds great. That'd be great. So without further ado, I'm going to transition the presentation mode over to Miriam. So Miriam, thank you so much. If you can kind of just quickly, you know, let me know if you have any problems with this.
Sure.
I'm going to try to make you also a host.
I think it should be all right. Okay, and then I'm going to attempt to share my screen. So if everyone can just talk to me. Okay, can everyone see the screen?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Great. Okay, so at the time when Nancy and I first started talking about this, it was pre-COVID-19, so I think it might be a little less relevant now, but I'm still more than happy to go through it. And again, very grateful for the opportunity to talk about the work that we're doing in Dubai and the UAE. Again, just to give you kind of a bit more of a background, we, as the center opened in in April of 2019, but we signed in January at Davos. So it's a UAE government kind of hosted center that works with the World Economic Forum. And so we tap into a number of the projects that they have in San Francisco at the Center for the Fourth Industrial Revolution, and with the rest of the network that they also have that they call the C4IR network, which includes many other countries, including India, Japan, China, Rwanda, South Africa, Russia now, Turkey, so it's quite a vast network. And the way that the projects work is you tap into kind of a set project within one of their portfolios, and then you kind of decide how you join that project. So the one that we've been working on within the blockchain portfolio is particularly related to blockchain and supply chain, and it's around developing a toolkit for decision makers who want to deploy blockchain in their specific organization. So I should give a disclaimer before I go into this presentation. I come from a policy background, not a technology background. So I wouldn't say I'm a blockchain expert, but I think that the way that we've started to look at blockchain in the UAE is really quite interesting, because we really dove into it. We dove into it around 2016 with the Dubai blockchain strategy. And one of the main reasons for this was because we were developing a digitization strategy and a paperless strategy. So it was really an idea of moving into a more efficient kind of transactions, more efficient use of the documents, and cutting down the amount of documents, particularly paper-wise, but also making transactions more secure. And so I think Alicia mentioned the traceability aspect. So that was really one of the main important, I think, factors of utilizing blockchain technology. And I would say generally with Dubai and the UAE, it's a government first strategy or a government first approach to things. So a lot of the time the government sees a technology that's interesting, tries to implement it, and then the private sector kind of joins in. And so I think that's one of the main reasons it's been successful, but it is also something to that might have held back certain parts of the industry. So it's both a pro and a con, I would say. And then in 2018, there was a larger Emirates federal blockchain strategy. So maybe to give a bit more context about the UAE, it's a federal system. So there's Dubai as one Emirate, but then there's seven other Emirates. So six other Emirates, and including Dubai being the seventh. And so this was a much larger strategy. And so the 2016 one was very ambitious. They wanted all 100% of government transactions on blockchain by 2020, which is this year. And given the COVID-19 situation, I don't think that that will be achieved. In 2018, strategy was 50% of government transactions. So this maybe to give you a bit more of an understanding of the blockchain ecosystem. Again, given that in 2016, there was a big push for government and private sector entities to utilize blockchain technology in some way, there were a lot of POCs and a lot of pilot opportunities and pilot projects that came out of it. So end of last year when we did this survey, there were 40 plus government entities that have trialed blockchain in some format, 120 plus companies that have come and set up, and then 200 plus blockchain initiatives. And again, to be very transparent, some of these worked, some of these didn't, some are still ongoing, some stopped pre-full implementation, some mid. And one of the main reasons that we did this survey and why we did this report really was to understand why these had stopped or why some had failed, some had succeeded. And I mean, the main reason for that, again, is because our center's a policy kind of first center. One of the main things that we hope to do is to be able to create policy that helps the end user. So we're really looking to speak to people in the field who are working with these technologies and understand what it is that is holding them back, be it regulation, be it kind of the industry or investment, things like that. So what we found, and we'll start with the challenges, what we found was that there were kind of three main challenges in each of these sectors. And of course, this is a condensed version, but we found that within government, the biggest challenge, and again, a lot of this is around governance, and again, because of my policy background, that's what I focused primarily on. In terms of government, yet the biggest challenge was about bringing stakeholders together. The other big one was educating the stakeholders that were involved. So we had a number, and again, because there was this big push in 2016 to implement blockchain technology, you had a lot of entities jumping on board and then realizing kind of within a few months that they weren't fully aware what the technology was or why it was useful, or if it needed to be used at all. And so that was, you see, the third one, that was really where I think a lot of projects stopped because they didn't understand the relevance, or perhaps they realized halfway that it wasn't necessarily the most relevant technology. I think for corporates and for service providers, it's really around the regulatory implications. So we had a lot of companies set up and then realize midway that they weren't really sure if it was legal or not legal, or if parts of it were legal. So crypto, for example, is kind of partially legal, but not legal. So, there's a lot of that that we're still trying to figure out as well. And then a lot of it was also around the education and bringing the stakeholders to the table. And I would say, and when I have a three kind of case studies out of the report that I want to showcase, but I think with most of the cases and most of the companies that we spoke to, stakeholders were the biggest kind of issue. Within the success factors, and I think that's always nice to find some good kind of good successes that we can learn from, the biggest one in government and in service providers was identifying the most valuable use case. And again, I think this goes back to both the strategies of 2016 and 2018, that there was a big push to implement blockchain, but again, a kind of, I would say, a lack of always identifying the best use case for it. And then you'll see as well, there's this, one of the big successes was being able to define the scope and the expectations. And I think that again comes from getting the stakeholders at the table and making sure that there were incentives for everybody to be there and for people to really know what they were meant to be doing within the projects. And again, some of this is very, you know, obvious, but it's funny how much you think it's obvious and then you see all of these things kind of play out and not work, you know, through kind of common sense, I say. And then I think in the service providers, what was interesting is that there was a need to define a clear engagement strategy. And again, that kind of goes back to this continuous communication. And so what all of this was meant to go into, and this is where it goes back to WEF, was this toolkit that was meant to be coming out at the Global Technology Governance Summit, which was at the end of April, but no longer happening then given the COVID-19 situation. But it was really this document that I believe still is coming out at that same time, that is something you'd give to a decision maker facing these kind of challenges, and they would go through and they'd see different parts almost of the journey that they could read up on. So if they were having an issue with bringing stakeholders to table, they can go through this to a certain section of the toolkit and see kind of step-by-step almost explanation or steps they can take to resolve that. And so these are some of the chapters in the toolkit that we thought were most important or most relevant to the work that we are doing here. So around the ecosystem, around the consortia formation, around compliance-related work, as well as digital identity and others. And I would say in terms of our legal framework here, because again, it's a very government-first approach, we find that the kind of the regulatory implications or the regulatory changes happen much later because there is almost like a, and I know this word's become quite a cliche, but kind of a sandbox approach to dealing with these technologies. And so I would say now things like smart contracts and as well as digital identity and digital signatures are things we're thinking about kind of post the trial period. And so based on kind of everything that we looked at in terms of challenges and successes, we found that these were the top kind of area that you see are the main challenges. And what was most interesting, I think, that we found from this was that they were really non-technical challenges. So when I went into the survey, I assumed that majority of the challenges would be technical, that it would be around maybe a lack of knowledge around the technology itself, or that we didn't have the right expertise or the people in charge weren't aware of how to utilize the technology, but it wasn't actually. A lot of it was really governance related, which for me partially was a relief because, as I say, I'm not an expert in the technology itself or the technical aspects of it. But it was also very, very, very interesting to see that we did have the technical know-how, but what we really need to figure out were kind of the people aspect of it. And so that's something we're still working on today. I don't claim to have any of the answers. But one of the things that we did with this report was we tried to find clear cases of different entities where it had worked and it hadn't worked, so we could figure out kind of what we need to focus on now. And so I have three case studies I was just going to briefly take you through. And they're slightly different case studies. So I think they're interesting just to see kind of the range of cases that have come out from 2016. So DP World is, as you might know, it's one of the largest sport authorities that we have here in Dubai. And it's operating in, I think it has 150 operations across 46 countries. And their case was really around logistics. So they had developed a trade logistics platform for businesses to basically easily share data and automate processes through open APIs and smart contracts. And as I say, the smart contracts thing is still, we're still trying to deal with kind of the legality around that here. But this was a trade platform that, or trade logistic platform that was being put in place. And this was really key for WEF because the project itself is a supply chain project. And I think particularly for us, at least, we saw a lot of use kind of for blockchain technology in supply chain primarily. And it was really to be able to encourage kind of trust between different platforms. So they were using this platform for their cargo owners or their importers, their freight forwarders, as well as financial institutions that they were working with. And they were hoping to be able to get kind of one main unified platform. And the reason for this was really to align all of the kind of the governance and the operations on a secure network. And I would say that they've done that pretty well. They're in the second phase of dealing with it. But I mean, I still think one of their challenges that came up when we were talking to them was really that each entity had its own platform. And so it was the interoperability of it, trying to put all of this together into one platform and deal with all the stakeholders. So again, it was less the technical aspects of it and more kind of the governance. And I mean, I guess after this, I'd love to hear if you have any better suggestions on how to do this based on the work that you're all doing. The other case is in a financial case. And so Emirates NBD is also a leading banking group in the Middle East, and they had adopted a platform as well in 2016 that was also blockchain-based. But what they were using, or what we focused on for the case, was actually around combating check fraud. So it was tackling check fraud. So they issue 1 million checks each month, which is pretty crazy. And 30% of these checks are susceptible to fraud. And so to counter that risk, they'd basically put, and again, excuse my lack of technical knowledge, but QR codes on each of each page of the checkbooks. And then blockchain's the kind of verification layer on that. And this was to tackle check fraud. But again, the reason I bring this up because it has the same kind of underlying use of the technology for verification and for security and trust, and again the challenges were really around the kind of the human aspects of it. So being able to get all the stakeholders on involved on board at the beginning, there was a lot of kind of, I would say, resistance. You know, why are we using this technology? Why does it matter? And one of the things I found actually when doing the WEF work as well was that I'm not sure if we've focused enough on kind of the value of blockchain. And then once you've gone through these processes, kind of the assessment of it and whether it's actually been helpful or not. And then the last one is slightly different. It's in the Ministry of Health and Prevention, and maybe given the current situation now, perhaps this one is the most relevant or most important, and it's regarding organ donation. So there's a registry that was developed called Hayat Donor, and it's a registry for recording and allocating organs. And again, blockchain here was used as a verification layer and to ensure that the documents that were put on and were verified and secure. And again, the kind of the biggest challenge was around the stakeholders and around kind of the governance of it, but actually also around the smart contracts. What's interesting now is that we're moving into a project around smart contracts. So we're trying to really figure out the kind of the jurisdictional issues around that disputes, as well as how we implement that kind of in the court system here, since we have quite forward, I would say, or quite futuristic, quote unquote, digital infrastructure, and then we have very kind of traditional, and so being able to kind of rectify that or merge that in some ways has been challenging. And that's kind of it. I said a lot, and I hope that was clear. This is the report. This is me, if you want to get in touch. But I'm actually a lot more interested in hearing what you all think, and based on the work that you've been doing, whether you've faced similar challenges and how you've kind of dealt with this. I think what we hope from the work that we're doing with WEF is to be able to really develop kind of the governance around this, and then to be able to help companies and public sector utilize this technology in a more efficient way without kind of having to deal with these administrative challenges or these more governance related challenges. Thank you. I can stop sharing my screen if you want to move over to you, Nancy.
Thank you, Miriam. Any questions for Miriam?
I'm assuming we're going to have this presentation available in PDF.
Yes, PDF. Miriam, send it over to me.
Oh, good. And then I just kind of have a comment. And when the challenges were displayed, it's probably true for everyone here that it's often not the technical aspect, really in blockchain or deploying that. A lot of it is getting the stakeholders together, and then as well, changing behaviors so that the blockchain is worthwhile. And I'll just say a quick aside, out here in Oregon, we've been building a blockchain platform for a company that grows hemp seeds, which are very, very expensive. So we did that, and then we said, well, if this is going to be worthwhile, what we need is constant updates from you when you're drawing down from the hemp seed lot that we have posted information on, certificates of authenticity and things like that. And that's been the biggest challenge. So I enjoyed seeing that challenges slide, because it's although blockchain is often thought to be super high tech, there's just a very big cultural component that has to happen for it to be effective.
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, I appreciate that. Given that, as I say, that I think I was coming in with not a lot of a lot of expertise in the technology itself. I just really assumed that the challenges would be around the technology and people not really understanding how to utilize the technology. And then it was very interesting for me to see that it was really focused around kind of the stakeholders and getting people involved. And I think what you say as well about the value of it, I think that that's still something that we find is hard to convince stakeholders, I think. Again, I say because there was such a push in 2016, we had so many projects try and use blockchain for kind of anything and everything. And I think that kind of failed because it doesn't work for everything. And it became almost kind of like a database, or you could have used almost an Excel, for some of the stuff that they thought Excel blockchain was needed for. And I think that was both a pro that, we tested a lot and think some things really work, but it was also a con in the sense that other entities that might actually benefit from the technology are now kind of like, well, no, it's not necessary. We saw that it didn't work and for this case, so it doesn't need to work for any case. So that's been an interesting challenge as well.
I would add to that also, in the conference and global forum, I attended 3-4 sessions, they were mainly focused that we're not facing the challenge of technology, but of making all the stakeholders on the same wavelength, bring them on the platform, because everyone has a different goals and stakes, and bringing them together for this platform to work was one of the major challenges. And I remember the company Honeywell, they especially highlighted this issue that bringing all the stakeholders who are doing all the airplane parts transaction manually is one of the challenge they are still facing.
Thank you.
Hi, it's Bobby. Great presentation. I had been following the Smart Dubai model for a while since they presented on the social impact call. And one of the things that I had taken away and have been, really interested in was how they defined everything as a journey just within the government. Now, when you say that you took it out to the Emirates, are they still using that journey model for the community consortiums?
So the 2016 strategy, the Dubai blockchain strategy, is under Smart Dubai. The 2018 one's actually under the Minister of State for Artificial Intelligence. But I would say that the journey kind of story, or the journey narrative, in the way that we kind of approach each of these projects is kind of a cultural thing. So we like it for everything. So even in the work that we do, we tend to refer to a lot of the different phases as a journey. So it's absolutely.
Well, I just thought that the way that Dubai looked at that was so innovative, because again, it's consortium and community that makes these blockchain works, and they address that right from the beginning.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it helps also being a quite community focused country as well, so.
I just want to add that Accenture worked on a report with World Economic Forum on building value with blockchain. So really thinking about the value drivers and help making building a business case prior to sort of developing a use case and kind of scaling. So just recommend checking that out. And I think one of the things that we've started to kind of focus on is not obviously, and I think others have talked about this, not really leading with blockchain, but really trying to solve sort of the business challenge. And, you know, blockchain is one of many tools to sort of help share data across an ecosystem. So I think that's sort of important to note. But we've definitely also uncovered that a lot of the challenges, as you mentioned, are on the operational business side of things. And one thing that we've come across is sort of even challenges with sort of the commercial viability. So if you have a commercialization model, and if you have issues onboarding, you know, new stakeholders, either due to technical or governance challenges, it becomes a problem with like who's paying for it. And if you're not getting enough people to come on board, it's hard to sort of maintain it as well.
Well, that makes sense.
And fund it.
Hmm? Yeah, and fund it. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Layla, could you share that in the notes? The report that you mentioned?
Yes, I'll ping it right now. Let me just get the link.
Thanks, or in email.
I should note that some of the sort of operational challenges I've noted are more of an internal thing. It's not in the report, but in terms of the building value piece, that I'll share that report.
Thank you. That's helpful. I actually had a question. I don't know if anyone else has been working on this. One of the things that we found after putting together the toolkit and then we tested it with a few of the organizations here was that afterwards they had asked for kind of an assessment tool. So to kind of assess if they've implemented blockchain correctly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we'd be happy to put together, but I'm not sure if that's actually feasible. And I just wondered if anyone else had done anything similar or thought it made sense or didn't make sense.
And when you say correctly, is that with respect from like all aspects of governance, sort of business operational, in addition to technical, or
so, yeah, I mean,
is
I
it
think
the value side, or
no, I think it is from the governance and the technical aspect of it, because the way that the toolkit's kind of set up is that this is a checklist, or these are questions that you ask yourself when you're going to set up a consortia, or these are the mm-hmm. questions you ask yourself, you know, when you're deciding if it should be a public or a private, you know. But I mean, other questions, of course, as well. And I think some of them are very easy, like yes, no, you know, you can see if you've implemented it. I think others might take longer to kind of come to fruition. And so there was this kind of desire of, well, how do we know if we've kind of put certain things in place successfully? And again, I just wondered if that was something that was even kind of feasible to do, because of course everything will be very different depending on the organization, or if there are certain things that you can measure. I don't know if my question makes sense. Yeah, please go ahead.
Alicia, I just want to say, looking at the toolkit, I think having those different items almost as a checklist is really important, because depending on where you are and the purposes behind creating an initiative for your for your supply chain are going to be very different. If I'm talking to companies in the US that are doing food and ag supply chain traceability, the needs in general are going to be very different than, say, in China, which will be somewhat different than, say, different. They're going to be different between mainland China and Taiwan, and the differences are also different, say, in Europe. So having the checklist as these are things to think about is really useful, instead of saying it must be this, it must be that, because having it be more directive is not going to take into account the very many differences. And that's something I get frustrated with sometimes when speaking to people, say, in the US who are developing something for, say, Indonesia, and not understanding the very many differences in the ecosystem there. So having that list of these are things to think about gives the flexibility for people to think about these topics, but how does it apply in the ecosystem for which they're building?
Yeah. So
that's helpful.
One thing just to add to that, you know, I think, Miriam, you had brought up a really good point that, you know, amongst the different industries, you know, everyone probably has different requirements of, you know, why blockchain, why not blockchain. One of the things that we could definitely do is look at, well, what are some shared values across different industries? And it could be something as simple as what are the different performance targets that need to be met? And, you know, amongst the Hyperledger community, there's a performance working group, which I think Karen can probably talk about more than I can, where they have created metrics as well as different ways we can benchmark performance as an example of this, to know. So for example, like, you know, we know Visa can do 40,000 transactions per second. You know, how can blockchain fulfill certain needs in a particular industry or use case and be able to still meet the performance targets necessary for that as a way of saying, should we go blockchain or should we not go blockchain or something like that? So there are many different ways we can do it, technical and non-technical ways of kind of deciphering that. But probably what we could need more of is understanding a couple of different baseline use cases and being able to analyze the similarities, as well as, you know, recognizing that there are differences and being able to just pare down that. So I'm just jumping in, but.
Yeah, that's helpful.
I think also, like, if you've identified some common challenges, as you mentioned, I know you mentioned, Nancy mentioned sort of shared values, but if there's sort of shared challenges, so when you think about integration or, you know, data management challenges or issues with sort of DevOps or like technical performance challenges, and then you could have like one on the sort of operational side around like governance and like, you know, legal IP, things of that nature. You have certain themes, and then and, you know, challenges that are grouped up into these themes, and can think about sort of best practices or at least questions or checklists that they can kind of go through as a way to sort of evaluate, like, you know, are these things that they thought about, are these things that are sort of missing, so that might be also a way to do it. And if there are certain indicators or targets that are best practices, either through Hyperledger or others, you know, those could be a way to sort of benchmark where available and applicable.
Great, thank you. I will look those up. Thank you so much.
Great, thank you, everyone. Any other questions or anything you guys want to raise out before we end the call?
Real quick, did we have the link, Miriam, to your toolkit?
So the toolkit itself that's coming out with WEF is going to come out at the end of April. So I will send that through when that's finally published. So this is kind of the pre-toolkit report. But the report is available, so I can send you a link to that.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
I will do that right now. Yeah.
So Miriam, thank you so much again for presenting us and also giving us a brief kind of sneak peek at what's upcoming. So really, really appreciate it. And Miriam, we'll definitely be in touch. And, you know, for the group, thank you guys all so much and stay safe and stay well.
Well, thank you again, Nancy. And thank you for everyone for taking out the time to listen to me as well.
Thanks for the presentation. Y'all have a great day.
Thank you, everybody. Stay safe.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.